everybody, and welcome to the Pulse 107.7. This is Food for Thought. Carol Lawrence, or is it Cheryl? I know you were thinking about changing your name. I'm sorry.
No, I wasn't. You were thinking about changing my name.
I changed it yesterday, but luckily you got your mojo back as Carol.
Yes. So Daryl noticed too.
Yeah, he did. Well, he's going to be watching me. You know, I get that. He's going to, you know, got his eye on me.
Mm-hmm. Keep That's us. All I'm going to say.
There you go. Hey, so here we are. It is Wednesday. No, it's Thursday. Thank God. My mind is in a fog because I've got a cold. I'm taking all this over-the-counter stuff. So I'm liable to say and do anything today. I'm just giving you folks warning. Keep your finger on the button, Bob, back at the studio, because I could be dropping all kinds of bombs that would pretty much put this Great Eastern Radio enterprise out of business.
Not
to mention the Red Arrow. No, I won't do that.
Oh, my gosh.
No, don't be afraid, Carol.
Bob, make sure you're aware, on guard, okay?
Bob's on top of it, I can tell. So you, Carol, had an interesting, fun evening as a judge last night. See, when you're on the radio, you get asked to do judgings and hostings, and there's so many food events, and a lot of them are fundraisers for really worthy organizations. And you were where last night?
We were at Good Life last night in Concord, and it was three chefs, all from assisted living facilities, and we had so much fun. And I sat next to Chef Nicole and Helen Reiber on the other side, and Tim Sink was there.
I like Tim.
Chamber of Commerce from Concord, president, and we had so much fun, so much fun. It was very.
All right, so this was an
food
iron
was excellent.
An Iron Chef type of event. Mm-hmm. The three participants had a half hour each. They knew that the mystery ingredient was chocolate.
They did.
What dishes did they make?
They made so many. I mean, Jason Seavey, he made they called it April Fool's Nachos.
Yeah.
They were nacho chips dipped in chocolate. And then he had like kind of, I believe I remember it was a mango salsa on top. But Chef Nicole will be joining us shortly. So
she'll remember.
We can find out for sure from her. And then he had a pork belly with a mole sauce on top over something about coffee-infused quinoa.
Oh, does that sound good?
Oh, my gosh. It was so good. So good. And then a little chocolate dessert with, I think it was like chocolate pot de creme.
Okay,
delicious.
So were they supposed to do more than one item, or was that optional?
No, I believe that was optional because the other one, Joe Gerber, I believe was his name, and again, I'm sure Chef Nicole can help me with this. He just did a dessert, which was fabulous. It was like a cheesecake filling and with some phyllo dough that was all crispy and cut up with some nuts in it, and I think there was some fruit in there too. And everything was paired with wine as well, so they were judged on the pairing of the wine.
So they selected the wines as well.
They did. Okay. They did. And then the other chef did a salmon, like encrusted in. There was some coconut in there, and some nuts and almonds, and I think pistachios. It was, and I love salmon. Salmon's like my thing. Very good.
But what? How did the chocolate play into salmon? That one strike
again,
me.
Again, I'm trying to remember what that one. We'll have to wait and talk to Chef Nicole.
Yes.
Because I don't remember. No, she's like she's a chef, so she, you know, and you could tell when she was judging that she was, you know, the one that was really in depth with the ingredients.
Well, you may have noticed this because I've judged a number of events with Chef Nicole. She literally picks the food apart and looks at it. And it basically deconstructs it. Sometimes, you know, with her fork, sometimes with her fingers.
Well, she was smelling it too.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you should do.
Yes. She bent down and smelled it, so I did too. It was funny, but yes.
Well, those events are fun. I'll be actually a part of a similar event in Nashua at the Nashua Senior Center here back in next May. And this one's a little bit different. It goes with four mystery ingredients that nobody knows about ahead of time. We also have long-term care and you know, rest home type of executive chefs. And we got about six of them. So it really gets crazy. And we have all the judges, and they'll get to taste all the different things they make. And since they don't know ahead of time, you really get very different on the fly dishes.
You must. I mean, because so they must be in a kitchen then, kitchen.
Here's what we do. We actually get a pantry. We have one of these metal shelf stand things, and we put the basic spices, some other things, some basic produce, things that we know they probably would need. And we also have a couple mixers, blenders, immersion blenders, stuff like that. So they have to provide a hot plate. because there is cooking, which there was not in your case last night. And they have to, you know, basically do the sautéing and the plate assembly and the whole deal. And so it's really a challenge, and we get a huge crowd, and people get rowdy, and it's really a lot of fun.
Very fun.
So I'll give the details as we get closer to that.
Nashua
Senior Center. It's going to be held at Alpine Grove in Hollis, which is big enough to accommodate. The first year we were at the Nashua Senior Center, and it was just the right size, but then we realized it could be better if we were in a bigger space. And this year, I think it's sold out already. It's got a really good vibe going.
That's wonderful, and that's exactly what Concord is trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
They had it at the actual, you know, center,
yes.
Good Life Center, and mm-hmm. it was full to capacity. There was standing room only,
yes.
And that's their idea, is to move it to a bigger facility. So
yeah, and there's places in town that they can probably find that will work for that. They think they'll do it again next year.
Oh yeah, they're definitely doing it again next year.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, here's what I hate about having a cold, which I do, and I'm not going to belabor it. We all get colds. Is it takes your taste buds away.
Ah,
you know?
Yes.
It's like, oh, come on. So actually that saves me money because I don't go to expensive restaurants and buy things that are going to be a waste of money.
There you go.
But what made me feel good today was the cup of broccoli cheddar soup that was prepared at Midtown Cafe today, and it was just what I needed.
Perfect.
To give me a little warmth inside. So
it's a good soup day, too.
Oh, it is. The clouds are back.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, we're in the 60s.
I know.
Some really good weather.
That's exciting.
So we're going to get to the point when the warm weather gets here, we're going to be wanting to grill stuff.
So we're going to have to talk about grilling. I am not a griller.
No. I got you covered there.
I'm not good.
What about Daryl?
Daryl does. Daryl grill. And, I love getting ready for grilling because mm-hmm. I can do all my work ahead of time and then just hand them the platter and go,
yes.
There you go.
Yeah,
and it's nice and easy.
Yeah, I have a smoker, something called the Big Green Egg, which maybe you've seen.
My dad has one.
Oh, does he love it?
Loves it.
I would love to hear what he's made.
And all kinds of stuff. We go there all the time in the summer.
Do you?
Yep.
Do you think I could bring it down and fire it up?
Oh my gosh, wouldn't that be fun?
Would that be fun?
Right here.
Just don't. We're only a block from the fire department.
That's right.
Merrimack Street here. We'll be just fine. No. So does he do ribs?
Oh, yeah. He does ribs and pork and chicken and all that stuff.
Because the ribs, you know, if you do it right, takes a good 5 hours.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I did Thanksgiving turkey the last 2 years.
Really?
On it. Yeah. And it got done as fast or faster than in the oven. And it's a lot juicier just by the construction of it and everything else. It's it's an amazing, it's my big boy toy. You know, I don't go for cars or construction equipment or, you know, hand tools. Give me the cooking stuff.
Nice. Mm. My kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So.
So the food holiday.
Oh, glad you brought it up.
Food holiday. It is National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day.
Okay.
Did you ever like peanut butter and jelly?
I did and still do. Don't have it that often, but I do like it.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I haven't had it for years, but I never liked the crust on a peanut butter and jelly. Though.
Oh, so
just
you
like
cut
the
it
center.
Off?
Yeah, the
really?
Center. Nice and, as a matter of fact, ooh, I could go for that right now. Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Want me to make an order? Do they have the makings up at the Midtown Cafe?
I don't think they do.
No.
Honestly, I don't think they do. But it's also, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but Pascua, Florida Day?
Spell it.
P-A-S-C-U-A, Pascua.
Okay. Pascua.
Pascua.
I think you're right. Yeah.
It's the state day in Florida, which basically what it means, I looked it up because it didn't really kind of give you any information here. It's the anniversary of the discovery of Florida in 1513.
Oh.
Yes.
And was it Ponce de Leon? Or
it was. Spanish explorer Ponce de Leon.
Yeah. And as far as we know, nobody's found the Fountain of Youth yet. They're still
That's
looking for
right.
it.
They're still looking.
Right. And I think the oldest settlement in this country is... is it Jacksonville? Or it's one of those cities right along the coast where the initial discovery was made. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You get a history lesson today with Food for Thought.
I know. What do you know? Learn something new every day with Food for Thought.
Well, tomorrow on our comedy segment, we kind of flirt around with sort of the food holidays. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Depends on what kind of mood I'm in. We'll be digging out some fun stuff about Easter.
Oh, good.
About Easter eggs.
Appropriate.
Also, for many people, they do not eat meat tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Many Catholics who observe Good Friday.
Good Friday.
They will not. So we have Stephen Colbert, who's just wild and outrageous. He's going to do a little rant on Meatless Mondays, even though it's Friday
cool.
tomorrow. So we got that. We got also, have you ever heard of a product, Peeps Milk? I mean, you know what Peeps are, right?
Those marshmallow. I do not like Peeps.
No, I don't either. I don't go anywhere near them. But there is actually a Peeps Milk product.
Like it's selling right now in the stores?
Oh, yeah.
So it must come in strawberry, lemon, or chocolate. Is it all of them together?
So we'll hear a New York Daily News report on that. And then Patton Oswalt, who used to be on the Drew Carey Show, he is going to do a little rant on Easter eggs. So we kind of got the weekend covered from a theme point of Meatless Monday all the way through the Easter traditions.
Good.
Which means
good.
That we're going to take a little break.
We are.
Shall we?
We are. You're listening to Food for Thought, 107.7 WTPL FM, and streaming live on the web also. And we're going to go on a short break. When we come back, we'll be in studio with Chef Nicole. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike, and we are live at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street, right in downtown Manchester, and we are in studio with Chef Nicole. Welcome, Chef Nicole.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much.
You have really become quite the little media personality over the years, and you do so well at it. When do you ever get any restaurant work done for Tom?
Yeah. It's good when you have a lot on your schedule, because then when I'm in the restaurant, I'm like, all right, there's no goofing off. I got to really get some stuff done today. Mm-hmm. It's good for me. I digress easily, so it's good if my schedule is very packed.
So you know what I'd like to know? What is it? What is a day in the life of Chef Nicole like? Like, okay, you wake up, and of course you have children, so you must send them off to school.
Yes.
And then walk us through a normal day in the life of Chef Nicole. I want you to put in at the restaurant too. One day at the restaurant.
Okay. So what I do, I'm officially the corporate chef for T-Bones and Cactus Jack's. I have a heavy culinary influence on Copper Door's menu. I sit on Copper Door's menu team, although there are separate executive chefs there. They're amazing. I deal a lot with a program called Chef Tech and another chef that works with us. Her name's Megan. She does the same, where we're tracking a lot of the restaurant's food costs when we're building recipes and specs. You know, my job is to make sure that we know exactly how much one sprinkle, which is a real measurement in Chef Tech, one sprinkle of scallions costs the company, you know. So we do a lot of costing. And then when I work with Tom Boucher, he's the CEO, I deal a lot with marketing, not only for the branding of, you know, the three different concepts and events and different dinners, but really the value of what we're serving. So, you know, I have a good grasp on the food cost and what we're producing, and then actually plating the food, taking a look at it. You know, is our customer gonna see value in this? Does it have good color? Does it have, you know, the quality that we would expect as guests that dine out? So there's a lot of different moving pieces and parts that go into it. But my typical day, I wake up. Yep, I have a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old. I'm very blessed. My mom nannies my kids full time, so it's amazing. Sometimes people ask me how I do it all, and I say my mom. I work with incredible
That's
people.
Wonderful.
I work with an incredible team. I have huge support in my job, in both my positions, and my mom makes my life very easy. And obviously, my significant other as well. We call him semi-retired. He's an engineer, so he works night shifts at BAE on the weekends only. So I'm pretty much week-driven.
Oh, my.
And then he's home with the kids and my mom most of the week, and then the weekend I have them, and which is good because he's very, like, regimented and on schedule, and I call myself, like, a hippie. You know, I'm very loosey-goosey. I kind of go with the flow and do what I want. So during the week, we have a very regimented schedule. We go to the gym with the kids a lot. You know, living healthfully and eating healthfully is very important to me. But yeah, while I'm at work, you know, sometimes I'm in the corporate office and I deal with graphic designers a lot, you know, because there's a whole menu piece to it and editing the menus and pricing the menus, making sure that the feel and the look of every piece of collateral and promotion that we put out speaks to our customers, speaks to the message we're trying to get across. I sit on the board for Feed NH, which is Great New Hampshire Restaurants Charitable Trust. I do a lot of different, you know, judging. Carol and I judged a chef event last night, which was really, really fun. I do some media. So I kind of hop around and, you know.
And, you know, when you talk about, you know, working on your menus, that is like the one thing that I notice all the time when I go to CJ's or T-Bones or even Copper Door. I mean, you go in and the menus are always forever changing,
yeah,
which is great. And they're so catchy. And I always, every time I go, I look at the menu and I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this menu. I mean, it
14 pages.
But it's beautiful and it's ever changing, like you said. And, you know, that's important.
Exactly. Simple things like that, that, you know, from the customer's perspective, when people ask, what do I do? You know, something as simple as the menu paper. Right. I mean,
yes,
I sit in meetings for 3 hours sometimes.
I feel it all the time. I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's synthetic. You know, it wipes easy so that you can keep it more sanitary and it's clean. You can use those menu pages for much longer. So the cost goes down actually over the year, which allows us to price items more value for our customers. There's always a formula and a lot of thought and rhyme and reason that goes behind all different all the different decisions that we make, even sometimes when we choose to spend more money on a type of paper or the feel or the look of it, you know, those small details that most of us can't just put our finger on add up, you know, 1 + 1 + 1 to make a really, really great overall experience or feel that you feel when you dine with us at any of our locations, depending on, you know, what we're trying to create, the culture we're trying to create and the atmosphere. So we spend a lot of time on the small little pieces that would seem kind of frivolous and funny, but
no,
really but total to a cool experience.
To a restaurant,
at each of
that's
the brands.
Huge. Yep. You have to.
I think you told me once that the cost of doing like the CJ menu per one was like really expensive. I mean, was it $75 or some outrageous number?
Yeah, I mean, to print the Cactus Jack's Manchester just launched their spring summer version of their menu, their dinner and lunch menu. And to print those menu pages was about $11,000.
Man. Yeah.
Now, and that's not even including when the years that come up that you have to actually replace the menu covers. Mm-hmm. That's a whole different cost. But we budget for it and we try to forecast and project that stuff. but for us, you know, to be able to, for the customer to have like a nice feel in their hand and, you know, to keep it clean. Simple things and operationally, it's easier for the servers to not have to be replacing. All of it goes into, so it seems very expensive, but for paper, yes. I know that cost off the top of my head because I made a grave error on Cactus Jack's Manchester's menu one time and it had to be reprinted. So that number's, number's kind of burned into my head a little bit.
Oopsie. Oh, my.
I bet you only did that once.
So you talk about new menus and reworking, you know, some of the new platings and stuff like that. And Tom has input on that, as he should, and other people do. How often do you have a disagreement with Tom, and who usually wins those?
Tom and I work very closely together. It's so funny. You know, I'm out in the public a lot at different events, and people are like, oh, you know, I know Tom, or Tom's my neighbor. I know Tom. Do you ever see him? Have you ever met him? And it's so amazing to me. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I heard of him. You know, yeah, I see him around. But it's so amazing to me because people think our company is so massive, and we are very successful, and we have some really great brands throughout the state, but we're really pretty small. You know, I work with Tom. I see him almost every day. We catch up. We have lunch together a lot. I travel with him quite a bit during the year because him and I are both very involved in menus and marketing. And, you know, him and his partners have done a tremendous job building the culture, and that's why I enjoy working for the company so much, and really, you know, them, because that's so important to them. And those guys are up every day working. You know, Dan, the chief restaurant officer, he's in the market every single day right now. That's about to open in a couple weeks. And, I mean, he's there from sometimes 3 in the morning until 9 at night.
So it's not open yet?
It's not open yet.
No, I didn't think so.
No.
Okay.
Very soon, and we're really excited about it.
This is on the east side.
Yeah,
so
Union Street.
Tell us what people are going to find when they go in. What's it going to be called?
T-Bone's Market.
T-Bone's Market. All right. So is it sort of a soup to nuts, butcher, tchotchkes, what's
exactly
going to be in there? Some of your blends, your Chef Nicole blends?
Yes, sir. It's really, really cool. It's so funny. Like, you know, it's just first and foremost, in order for our company to grow, we had to open a commissary or market because, and I know Tom mentioned this last week when he was on the show, the butchers and the bakers that work for our company, they were working in the back of Bedford T-Bones in this kind of tiny little space. It was so funny. When these guys went from the back of Bedford T-Bones to this like 10,000 square foot building, I think, you know, it's like,
I got lost.
Yeah, you feel very lonely, right? So in order for the company to grow, because the butchers and the bakers are making all the desserts from scratch, cutting all the beef, grinding all of our burger, and then there's a fleet of refrigerated trucks, vehicles that deliver fresh deliveries to the stores every day. Well, in order to open more restaurants and grow, we couldn't work out of the bed packet. We needed to have room for the butchers and the bakers. So that was the primary function of it. And, you know, we just have such a cool brand and we have a lot to offer, different retail items. So, yes, there'll be a butcher there. So if you love T-Bone's Burgers and you're having a barbecue and you want to buy 5 pounds of ground hamburg, you know, our, you know, reserve premium ground hamburg, just pull, you know, come to Union Ave and we'll, you can buy it by the pound. Marinated tips, chicken. There'll be a whole bakery case, some breads. And also for folks that are just out and about working in the area, there'll be a deli kind of bar
That's
as well.
That's right. Mom said
that. Ciabatta sandwiches. And I was just editing this menu yesterday. Sandwiches. And there'll be a salad bar and some soups. And there's coffee bar there. So, you know, burgers, fries,
CBCs. So it must be a pretty good size for the,
Yeah, the retail space is awesome. I believe that the goal is to be the biggest craft beer distributor in the state.
You said that too, remember? Yes, I remember.
So I support that goal 100%. And there's awesome wines. There's like a whole wall of wine, and it's really cool. And there's this little Chef Nicole stand, and then you can buy, like, you know, the company book and steak knives and all different, you know, packaged products. There'll be some really hyper-local dairy products there, like cheeses, you know, hopefully milk down the road. I believe the bakers are going to start making, like, homemade chicken pot pies in time. You know, we'll kind of have a soft opening and make sure that all the wheels are turning.
To take them to go, like,
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah, for ready-to-eat meals
Family
to go.
Meals
mm-hmm.
and...
Exactly.
Oh, very good. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Food for Thought. We're on 107.7 FM, and we are in studio with Chef Nicole, the executive chef for Great New Hampshire Restaurants, and otherwise known as T-Bone's, Cactus Jack's, and Copper Door. We're going to go on a short break, and we'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Hello, welcome back. It's the Pulse 107.7 and Food for Thought, Carol and Mike. And we're brought to you by Fallon's Furniture, the official decorator of the Green Room, which, Chef Nicole, this is the first time you've been down here. Would you not admit that is the nicest green room of any radio station you've been to?
Truthfully, I walked in here and I said, this is pretty chic in here.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Thanks
it's,
to...
It's beautiful. It really is.
Fallon's Furniture. And we've got our own little Keurig coffee dispenser, and that's from New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, and they're at newenglandcoffee.com. So we have some good folks that are hooking up with us here.
Love New England Coffee as well.
Now, I've known you for a long time, and I remember you telling a story a number of years ago.
Oh, boy.
You took a little vacation to Southeast Asia.
I did. A sabbatical.
Yeah, you took a sabbatical and just wanted to get it out of your system or just do something different.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be a little longer than you initially had planned.
Yes, it was.
So give us the backstory on
Okay, this. So what had happened was, so I was in my undergrad, and first of all, I've worked in restaurants since I was 14. So between school and work, it just, you know, I've always been a pretty hard worker. I went right into culinary school. It was in culinary school at Alvern High School. So culinary program, went right into Southern New Hampshire University culinary program. Had a fabulous time there. Finished my undergrad at SNHU. Went right into my master's program there. And I said, you know what, and so I started at T-Bone's in 2006. I was in a class, I forget the name of it, but basically it was a class that did case studies on different restaurant companies. And we did a case study on T-Bone's Cactus Jack's. And really the point of the case study was about the longevity of the employees in the companies. Mm-hmm. As Carol can attest to, you know, in the hospitality or restaurant industry in particular, longevity is not something that you always come across because it's kind of like a transition job where people do it while they're in school or what have you. There's not a ton of barrier to entry in terms of skill. You can be coached and taught, which is awesome. But so longevity was, so having worked in restaurants for so long and being, I was always a food lover. We did this case study on T-Bone's Cactus Jack's, and I said, oh my goodness, I'm looking for a job when I graduate. This has been 2005, and I graduated from undergrad 2006, so I needed to get a job because my student loans were going to roll in, and my dad was like, I don't know what you're doing when you get out of school, but you better get yourself a job, my friend. So we toured Dairy T-Bones because Dairy T-Bones had just opened. And I said, you know what? Oh, so they didn't hire managers from outside the company. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to totally just... put a resume together and a cover letter, and I'm going to introduce myself to who's the chief, now the chief restaurant officer, and see if I can just get an assistant management job or something, because I really liked the company. I loved the longevity aspect of it. So I get to Dairy T-Bones, and I'm kind of all, you know, puffy-chested, and I'm like, totally going to do this. And then I get to Dairy, and Dan is like 6'7". No, he's like 6'4". And I'm, if anybody's ever met me, I'm like 5'0". So I like kind of shriveled up a little bit, and I'm like, oh, great, I got to meet this giant, you know. So I just give him my resume, and kind of the rest is history. But so I was a dining room manager in Hudson, and then moved to Cactus Jack's Manchester, and then Laconia was opening, and I was one of the only managers at the time that had freshly been trained at a T-Bones and a Cactus Jack's, and our Laconia location is dual concept. Right. And, you know, I was young, I didn't have any kids, I lived in Nashville at the time, so it was easy for me to make the transition. So I'm like, you know what, it'd be a really cool experience to open a restaurant, see what it's about. Cool was the word I used at the time. It was a very growing experience, I can say. Everybody should do it. You get a real good appreciation for lots of different things in the industry. It's amazing. But so I had, then I was at Laconia for about a year and a half, and it was a very, you know, very fun, very, very knowledgeable time, but very stressful. And like I said, I've been working forever. I knew I wanted to have kids within a couple years, so I'm like, you know what? I want to do something, and I love Southeast Asian cuisine. Love it, love it, love it. So totally hands down my fave. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go to Thailand. So I found this volunteer abroad program. I was volunteering abroad teaching English, which I have no skill set in doing, but it was totally a good way to get there. So,
funny.
You know, it was like to children in preschool, basically ABCs, and I'm like, oh, I can totally do that. So I went to volunteer abroad. So I actually lived in Bangkok I planned on going there for 2 months. And while I was there, so I would volunteer abroad. I mean, I would volunteer a couple hours every morning, Monday through Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we could do whatever we wanted. And flights in Southeast Asia, around Southeast Asia, are super cheap. So I would fly to like Koh Samui and Koh Phangan, which are Thai islands. And I was like, oh, I'm totally going to fly to Singapore. Who wouldn't want to go to Singapore, right? And now, mind you, the Thai baht at the time was like, the U.S. Currency was like one U.S. dollar was 36 Thai baht. So I was like living the high life out there, okay, until I got to Singapore. And apparently their money, it's very similar. They have an unbelievable economy. It's very expensive. So anyway, I get there and I'm like,
are you by yourself for this whole thing?
Well, I flew there by myself.
Okay.
Yeah. If anybody knows me, I'm a little risky. Okay. So I flew to Southeast Asia and I said, please God, somebody pick me up. That's not a total lunatic that's going to kill me. Because I really, you know, I checked out the organization, but basically I showed up, I flew into Suvarnabhumi Airport in Bangkok with two big bags, and I didn't go through any, you know, I got my passport stamped in Tokyo and my passport stamped in Thailand, and basically they just let me walk into the country. So I was like, I hope somebody picks me up, because it's like a 28-hour flight, you know, you don't realize how much you're on the other side of the world until you land and you're like, oh my goodness, I am not in Kansas, okay?
Yeah.
So somebody did pick me up, which was great. And so it's about, then it's like, it was like an hour drive to where I was staying in Bangkok. And the whole time, you know, I was like shallow breathing. So I'm like, please take me to where you're supposed to be taking me, because I'm in this car and I'm by myself. And again, I'm like a 5 foot tall chick. So I'm like, please nobody, my parents find my body in Southeast Asia somewhere. So but all was well. I get to this house in Bangkok. And so my point being, I didn't stay at a hotel. It was not a commercial or touristy part of Bangkok. I was very much in the middle of the city. I had to learn a couple, you know, very important things, basically how to get home, if to take cabs and things like that. But so when I got there, I met a couple girls that went to Stanford that lived in California, a couple girls from Canada. So we became fast friends. And so we would travel on the weekends together. So I decided I was going to Singapore. So I get to Singapore and I'm like, oh, I'm not just going to stay in like, you know, the city. I already was in Bangkok, and once you're in Bangkok, it's like, you want to talk about city, it's amazing. So I'm like, I want to go to like the jungle. So again, I'm very stubborn. So before I went to Southeast Asia, I was supposed to get all these shots and all these different things. And let me just advise you to do so. Okay. Public service announcement, because I'm like, no, I don't need any of that. So while I was in Singapore, I was in the jungle. And so I flew back to Bangkok a couple days later. I feel like somebody has broken every single bone in my body. I was in excruciating pain. And anyway, so I go to the, I get rushed to emergency room in Bangkok, and I have something called dengue fever, which is from a mosquito.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not a good thing to have. It can be very deadly. So basically, I have this. I was in the hospital for 5 days in Bangkok, and they, you know, so it's crazy because the U.S. Department of the U.S. Center for Disease Control called me. And it's amazing being a U.S. resident and what people know about you, you know, and they called me and they said, do you feel like you have adequate care? Do you want us to arrange you a flight home? My mom was devastated. She's like, wait, come home, you know, and I'm like, oh no, I got like 3 more weeks here. I can't, I'm going to sweat this out. I was saying to the doctor, I'm like, what's going to happen? So he's like, you know, hopefully everything's so when you start to get on the healthy side from dengue fever, you get this, like, you just want to scratch your entire body off from your head to the bottom of your toes. So I went through that as a miserable, I was up for like 48 hours straight. It was very miserable experience towards the end of it. But then I went back and all was well. So then fast forward. So I had a blast, you know, really good. By my last 2 weeks there, I was taking cabs all over Bangkok by myself. I was, you know, speaking Thai. So it was really fun. The food is ridiculous. I mean, I was like going to really nice restaurants and just street food everywhere. It's just so cool.
Scorpions on a stick and stuff like that.
Oh, it's so cool. It's really, really cool. I love spicy foods. So lots of really spicy foods. So then I'm supposed to be flying home, and so there's a monarchy, you know, there's a king there, and then there's a parliament. So what happened was some like guerrilla group or something took over the airport, so my flights were canceled for like a week. It was this whole, you know, my dad is like, you are ridiculous. You need to come home. You should have never went.
And you were hugely disappointed, weren't you? That you had, like, to stay another week.
Yeah, exactly. It's like 90 degrees and tropical, and it was just amazing there. So I ended up being there for close to 3 months.
Wow.
And so, I would go back in a second. I had so much fun.
That's a great story. I didn't know all the other stuff about the dengue fever. You never told me that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And Tom never told us that either.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Wow. He's like, great thing to talk about on the air.
No, it is an interesting
story.
So
nothing's wrong with me now. I just can't give blood.
Because
because what happens is when you've had that type of, you always have the antibody to fight it. So it's very dangerous if somebody gets it again.
Right.
Because there's different variations of dengue fever. So if you get it again, your body instantly fights the first kind you had. And if it exhausts itself doing that and it's actually the different kind, you can, then that's when it gets really deadly. So I just can't give blood, but I'm totally fine. Nothing's wrong with me. Not in that aspect, at least.
So what happened, and for those of you tuning in, we are, you are listening to Food for Thought. We're in studio with Chef Nicole, executive chef of Great New Hampshire Restaurants. And so what happened when you came back from this huge trip and went back to T-Bone?
Oh, yeah. So while I was in Thailand, I would talk to Tom every now and again, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I love food. I mean, Mike, you know, me and Mike are, you know, we go back, and food is totally my passion. I touch it. I smell it. I love everything about it. It's
I was
like
watching
a sport.
You smell it last night.
It's like a sport to me. I'm a food obsessed. I love every single thing about it. I'm hugely passionate about it. So I love the restaurant industry and I love the culture of Great New Hampshire Restaurants. Seriously, it's this amazing company to work for, but I didn't want to be in dining room management anymore.
Right.
I wanted to do something a little bit different, have some more influence on the menus. So at the time with our marketing company, Tom had said, you know, we were looking to put, the company was growing, let's put a face behind the brand. And here I am. So
and there became
so
Chef Nicole.
Yes. Yeah, so I came back. I was in the office, and you know, Tom was very real with me. He's like, Nikki, you know, I don't. We're making this job up as we go here, so I need you to kind of just fill in some pieces and parts. So, which really gave me a great opportunity to work with the chief administrative officer. Her name's Lisa Allen. She's a very good friend of mine. She's amazing. You know, that woman is like superwoman. She like can do spreadsheets like no other, and she manages the office. So I got to know a whole different side of the company, payroll, accounting, which now plays a big piece in what I do every day, especially accounting and, you know, working with budgets and things like that.
So you really, so, you know, like every aspect of the whole
shebang. I work
with
quite a bit of different pieces and parts. There's a lot of moving pieces and parts, and I'm a little tiny piece of a lot of them, so. I'm just going to take Tom's job someday.
Oh, this just in.
Oh. No, he knows.
Breaking news. Yeah.
I already told him.
Well, it's great that he had the vision, because not everybody would actually spend the money to create a new position. He saw something in you that clearly has paid off, because there are so many dimensions to you. And this trip to Southeast Asia gave you some more personality that and more perspective on the world.
Oh, for sure.
You
know?
You needed to do that. I mean, you needed to do that for you to be you right now. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know?
Uh-huh. Exactly. I feel very fortunate in the fact that I've made some decisions and done some things that maybe in the moment didn't make people overly thrilled, like my parents, or, you know, I flew to Paris when I was 5 months pregnant with my 14-month-old, with people like, what are
that.
You, crazy?
Yeah.
But I don't have a lot of regrets, you know? I'm like, oh, just is what it is, you know? If you feel like you want to do something, do it, and you just got to have fun, so.
Well, that's it. Our time is up. Chef Nicole Barrera, Great New Hampshire Restaurants.
Wait,
so nice
I have
you.
So many more questions for her. We're going to have her back.
We'll have her back.
Yes, for sure. Right.
Well, thank you, Chef. Good to see
thank
you.
Thank you guys very much for having me. I appreciate it.
I will see you at Fire and Fusion next month.
Yes, sir.
For a lot of fun with some of the nursing homes in the Nashua area. All right, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, I've not met our blogger, Linda Ditch.
From Kansas.
From Kansas. Originally, though, from the
well,
Hippo, right?
Originally from Kansas, came here for a few years, and then back to Kansas.
All right, well, coming back, 107.7 The Pulse. It's food for thought.